You are listening to a podcast from the New York Oracle Users Group. The information given here is provided on an as-is basis. The presenters, as well as the officers and steering committee of the New York Oracle User Group, disclaim all warranties, expressed or implied, with regard to this information, and will not be responsible for any loss or damage arising out of the use of any information contained in this presentation.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Our clients are typically using our technology in large data warehouses across Oracle, different versions, Teradata, DB2. And I will talk about some newer options for data protection, and we'll explain that. I think a good starting point, can you hear me now? Okay. And you can see the slides, they are, the font is large enough, right? I always like to start from the hacker's perspective in these days and briefly talk about attacks on databases. And then I want to spend most of the time discussing different technologies for protection, Oracle native technologies and third-party technologies, and position those technologies regarding the protection level and other, let's say, evaluation criteria. So I will include a couple of these techniques: data type preservation technologies, masking, tokenization, activity monitoring. And a lot of these evaluation criteria are focusing on cost effectiveness, total cost of ownership, and really looking at different aspects. So let's start with the data under attack. I find this Verizon study pretty interesting. What I like about this Verizon study is that this is not just data that was lost. This is about breaches that actually led to investigations, where they actually had some fraudulent results of the breaches. We know that we hear a lot about outsiders, but it's actually the number of records that were lost is much larger in the insider attacks, insider breaches. And secondly, what is very surprising to me in this study, and this is a study that condensed, I would say, data from the last 5 years of breaches with a very competent team, the Verizon risk management team. And what they found, it's not the backups or the laptops that is causing these large breaches, many records. It's actually our online databases. So we know that There are many attackers. These days we are seeing more and more internal people that are facilitating. Can you still hear me? Good. In many cases there is an internal resource that is facilitating a breach. It could be a malware trojan planted at the application layer, sometimes being injected via a web technology SQL injection. Now someone is using a browser and putting in some control characters to execute, for example, another SQL command into what the application is just is submitting as the normal SQL query from that application. I will not talk about the anatomy of these attacks, exactly how they are done. I'll just point out the nature. So in this case, we have someone entering a social security number. So it's in red. And I will be using this annotation, usually used in government, where the red illustrates unprotected sensitive data, and the black one illustrates protected sensitive data. So in this case, someone is entering social security number, it comes in, processed by the application, and in this case we have an encryption happening in the database, at the database layer, or some kind of data hiding, making data unreadable. And when the data goes down further into your file system storage and, you know, backup, it's protected. So in this case, you could say, okay, we took care of most of the attack surface at this layer. So I will come back to this approach of peeling the onion and see how deep is the defense, or how I would say how high is the defense, because it's a lot of height that is important. To attackers are going up the stack. For example, Heartland, we saw SQL injection planting malware in the payment system network, the application layer, sniffing out data, encrypting it, sending it out to the bad guy. That's one example. And one lesson learned is that the higher the stack you go with your protection, the more of these attacks are mitigated. In this case, in particular, we are seeing that the protection option in the database is actually leaving the last four digits in clear text. Why? Because in this case, they found that many applications are just using the last four. Last four of social security number, last four of credit card number. So there's no reason to expose the first five here to an attacker and to most applications. So you can limit the attack surface. So this is a general thinking throughout this presentation. How could that be applied? Okay, we said if this clear text data is, in this case, encrypted or locked down at the application layer. So when the application is done with processing, it turns part of the field into ciphertext or protected. So when the data goes down the stack, the database file system storage, and over to the next system storage and up to database, it's protected. So if you have a sniffer up here, it will not see the clear text data. If you have a virus in this application, it will not see the full data. Same here. So let's look at the top 15 threat types or attack vectors. This is from the investigation report again, where they looked at the number of records. So here you have the volume that was exposed or stolen, compromised, involving criminal activity. And here you have the number of breaches, the frequency. So we have a couple of techniques that are up in this corner. You have sniffing, you have SQL injection, key logging, and we'll just briefly talk about some of these devastating types of attacks. Now let's go back and look at the data flow down here and map some of these attacks. For example, here you have a sniffer that is trying to sniff out data at some level. It could be on a port on your server, could be in the network. And I'd like to talk about different mitigating techniques, mainly techniques that are actually locking down your data, not securing your platform, because hackers are too smart. They will easily circumvent that and work in the air gap between your different systems, servers, air gap between different system layers, if you just secure the system layers. They are looking at the data flow, looking for the weakest link. That's the trend that we see reported by Gartner, Verizon, and others. So, it looks very complicated, but it's not. I will be talking about ways to address these different attacks. We don't need to dig into all the details here about how the attack was executed, but I just want to put the focus on what the breach history is saying that hackers are doing, and put that in perspective, map that against different protection technologies, and look at what specifically is happening in our system where the breach actually happened and where the data is exposed. First out is Gartner, and what they are saying is that we need new technologies. We need different approach, because now we are talking about snipers, we are talking about highly skilled people that criminal organizations are hiring. Could be internal people, could be external hackers. And they are not scanning your systems and looking for common vulnerabilities and try to mess with you. They are looking for your data, and they are determined, they are going after you until they get the data. They want the value of the data. So it's a rifle attack we need to protect against, not the general hailstorm or that type of attacks. The sad thing is that they are smarter, more determined, have higher skills, and it's hard to keep up with them. We cannot keep up with them. They are finding vulnerabilities faster than we can mitigate these vulnerabilities. So what do we do? We can protect the data. So if they hack the system, they will get nothing in most points. So we limit the window where data is exposed, and when it travels through our system, it's protected. So let them hack. This is a trend that targeted threats, malware type, Trojans, and so, is going up. Even though we are pretty successful, or we are seeing moderate volumes of other types of attacks, these are going up. Watch out. So what are people saying? This is another story from Forrester, in this case, Forrester Research. And they are basically reporting that data security is on the top of the list by the companies. I think the base is almost 2,000 U.S. and European companies. So we need to protect the data. So let's look at different approaches, high-level approaches, and start a position. Here we have a client, some type of application. Here we have a database, file system where the data is stored. Database is storing the table space files. Then we have a log file. And I will be using this annotation. So the first one is really illustrating locking down the data. You encrypt or do something to lock down the data fields or data files, on different levels. And then you have the passive, what I here call the passive, the monitoring, looking at what is going on the network or afterwards, what happened in the log file. It kind of looking at documenting that a breach really happened after the fact. So I will be talking about web application firewalls, database activity monitoring, data loss prevention, database activity monitoring that is agent-based, host-based on your database server. The first one is sitting on the network, typically on a mirror port, looking at mirror traffic, switch port. Then we'll be looking at database column-level encryption, database tablespace encryption, and database log file, mining, and we will contrast these different technologies. Look at the good and the bad of different technologies. So, the passive method, looking at log files or blocking masking. So, for example, you just get the masked value out. So, monitoring. What do we actually should we consider, and what are the advantages? It's pretty obvious that we're not locking down the data, so it's transparent. We are just monitoring activity, so it's a low impact. But the data is exposed, and it's not good enough for PCI, and we're seeing state legislation, Massachusetts breach law, the High Tech Act, HIPAA, tighter HIPAA enforcement, and these laws are tightening. Many of them are looking at the PCI, DSS, the credit card industry protection standard as a bar for the protection. So we need to go beyond monitoring. What is the Ponemon Institute saying about different approaches? This is for PCI DSS. Which technique should you use? And they are basically saying that encryption of data at rest and data in motion is highly cost effective if you want to be compliant. And being compliant will not make you totally secure, but it will raise the bar up to a level at least, and you will be compliant. It's interesting, you have the database activity monitoring at a very low cost effectiveness. I would say this type of technology is maybe at the top of the hype cycle now. Gartner called it the hype cycle. It's maybe one of the hottest buzzwords right now, but they're giving it a low rating. In the middle, we have web application firewalls, preventing SQL injection, cross-site scripting, and so that we talked about earlier. We have the data leakage prevention, another data loss prevention, another buzzword, where people are confused about the benefit. So it's a medium benefit, and you are basically not protecting the data on your servers, not locking down the data. You are scanning your environment for misplaced data. So if you find sensitive data out on an endpoint or going on the network, there will be a report basically saying, oh, we lost this data. So a summary of the passive techniques, I put the different main categories on the left. And over here, I looked at the operational impact. So it's a very low security rating for the reasons I talked about before. These technologies can, in general, not prevent the bad guy from stealing your data. It can prevent the good guy, or it can help the good guy to not misuse sensitive data, misplace it, download a client list on a laptop, for example. So these technologies will alert you basically that, okay, now the data is gone, watch out. And quite a few of the requirements in the legislation is looking at separation of duties. And by monitoring it, you don't get much separation of duties between security and data management. It will be good from you know, footprint storage performance aspect. So for some type of data, low risk data, maybe this could be the appropriate approach. So let's take a look at some newer options. There's a lot of confusion in the market about the good and the bad and how they are different. On top of that, there's a lot of misinformation from vendors in the market selling typically one of the options. And they're basically saying that their technology can solve all the problems, and they are in many cases not talking about the limitations. And we will talk about the limitations here, considerations, what you should watch out for. The format controlling encryption, or data type preservation, or formatted encryption, format preserving encryption, there are many acronyms for the same thing. And it's basically using an algorithm, mathematical algorithm, so it's a cipher, using an encryption key, a secret encryption key, to turn your clear text, in this case social security number, to cipher text, something encrypted. But if you look at the format here of the data, it looks like a social security number, so the encrypted output is controlled. It's not a longer binary bit string. It's still the same data type, maybe a numeric. Still, you have the 5 digits as you had in the input data. So it looks pretty nice. And then the user can convert it back by decryption into the original value. So how is data tokenization different? Because why do I have a credit card number here and a social security number up here? Simply because this technology up here cannot be used for cardholder data, not for PCI DSS data, because it's not currently not approved by NIST as an approved encryption method. There are a couple of them out in the market from our company and other companies, and they are basically using AES encryption standard, but it's a modified version. So National Institute of Standards and Technology are saying this is not a tested and well understood approach. So why is it still used for PCI sometimes? Because the auditors, they are not always on top of this. So they have a lot of freedom to choose a less secure. DES is hacked. If you can afford to buy a smaller size BMW, then you have the resources to crack DES. My friend Matt Curtin wrote a book called Brute Force, where he described how he broke the DES algorithm by brute force, key extortion, about 10 years ago. So DES is hackable. Triple DES is not at this point. When you move into quantum computing, it will be pretty quick to break triple DES also. We don't have that yet. And by the way, quantum key management, we have that, but quantum key management is totally separate from quantum encryption. And it's all about how the, you know, inner workings of an atom is spinning and the polarization of light. For example, quantum key management, you send a light beam between two parties, and depending on how the light is polarized, you get different key values. But that's a separate story. So right now, RippleDesk is not hackable. Hacked. Regarded as secure, if you go to NIST, they will tell you it will be secure for X number of years out. That's their prediction. It gives you an effective key length of 81 bits, and so. But I don't want to do. I don't want to go deeper in that specific area. I can easily spend 3 hours talking about that topic. If you are interested, I'm happy to do that. But the problem is that the more you encrypt, the less secure you are, in general. The more times you provide the service to decrypt, the less secure you are, because you're offering it to everyone that is looking at the data. So what you should do, don't encrypt the data that everyone is using, and don't provide them the keys and the services. Keep it separate. The only few people need to see the first five. They should have access, that system, that application. So it's a separation of system components. The less you encrypt, the more secure you are. It sounds a little bit contradictory, but it's a basic principle. Down here, I'm illustrating with the credit card or cardholder data, because this approach is PCI compliant. And the token format of the replacement value, it looks like what we have up there. The format is preserved, looks like the clear text data. In this case, I left the last four, because most applications are just looking at the last four to verify that, okay, this was your credit card number, and when you do a chargeback or whatever, and looking for your purchase. Very few applications need to see your full account number. Only applications that are, you know, doing chargeback or settlement or few transactions. And then the data goes into the whole infrastructure, where a lot of applications are actually using the card data, unfortunately. But that's the case. Cannot change that. Cannot rebuild all the applications that are using that. So they look the same, but they are very different, very, very different from a security point of view. A token is created by a token server. So when I get the card number, I some way send it over to the token server. Either application is making a call out and get a token value, replacement value back. So in my application database, I have casino money that is good for playing within my enterprise. But when I need to talk to a bank, I need to go back to the cashier and turn the casino money back to real money, real credit card numbers. So you have a central concept here that is typically with today's technology out there. You have one central server in the world. So it could be in UK maybe, and the business in US need to connect to that server and get the token. That's the current state. So there are that's one limitation of this second approach. The format controlling approach is more distributed. You just distribute your encryption keys and off you go. So let's compare to the more traditional methods. We are using, let's say, just a normal triple DES, normal mode, cipher blockchaining, improved by NIST, and so. We don't need to talk about the details, but this is an approved traditional method. It's been secure for the last 20 years. People understand it and try to it's been analyzed and vetted for a long time. But the output from the encryption that goes into the database is ugly. It's a long binary string. Could be longer than your input data. If we compare that to hashing, to be secure, you need a key called keyed hash. You should use a long hash. This is 20 bytes. Could be inconveniently long. And by the way, SHA-1 was broken by a Chinese team in university in China 2 years ago. So the recommendation is to go to SHA-2, 256 and longer. And now NIST is having a competition for even longer SHA-3 replacement. Hashing is not well understood. It's easy to break. And worst is that people are, in many cases, implementing hashing in a not-so-secure way. Hashing can be attacked easily, particularly if you are not using a secret key in the hashing process. Hashing is, I usually say hashing is for passwords, but not for business data. If you salt your hash to make it more secure, you can no longer use it in your data warehouse, because you get a new value each time. So your statistics, it will not be useful for statistics. And it's not transparent. It will break your data type, break your length, and it's a moving target. You need to expand it in length over time, strengthen it. And the rule is that if you are using a key, then you should do an annual key rotation, because the key is expected to be exposed in that time. So what do? You need to go and rehash everything. So you keep the data somewhere, create a new hash, and I think the incentive is gone if you want to keep it secure. The whole premise of hashing is not, it's for password, but not for the type of business data we're talking about here. Let's look at locking down the data. We're still at a very high level, and we're looking at the impact profile again. Let's compare the different approaches that we mentioned before. Down here we have the table space, or the data file, OS file. I lumped it into one here to make it simple, at a high level. We'll break it down later on. Here we have the tokenization. Here we have the normal triple DAS. Here's the application level. This one we are here doing at the column level. So we have some capability in the database that is providing it. So we can look at the landscape. We are starting to be a little bit more secure. A lot more secure. We are paying on the transparency side, particularly up here, and we are getting nice separation of duties. We are moving up the stack, getting more control, but we are paying on the performance level, you know, a little bit. It will cost to encrypt. Sometimes we get a table scan, and sometimes that can hurt. So, strengths and weaknesses. Here we are listing basically the five different high-level options, approaches. From the clear masking monitoring, the formatted encryption, the strong encryption, tokenization, hashing. We talked about PCI, so I just mark these options as PCI compliant. And if we are measuring again at this, we can easily read the chart where the weak points are. I don't want to spend more time at this high level, but it's one way to start to decide what is good for certain type of data, certain type of environments in your organization. I think we all know what strong encryption is. I just want to mention it's industry standard, NIST approved. There are some advantages, a lot of compatibility and deployments out there. It performs pretty good, PCI compliant. If I try to put that data in the database, it will, you know, break the database schema. So I need to take care of that. If I have a packaged application, maybe PeopleSoft or SAP, it may violate my services agreement, maintenance agreement. You need to do key rotation. So this is the nature of strong encryption. There are good use cases, but in some situations I would like to look at different options. We talked about hashing already. I think we can just say that this is not really for the business data we are talking about here. What is happening to my data when I apply these different approaches? Here we have some input with an original language. I have the clear text. And here I'm saying, this is what my application is built for. And then I'm moving up the stack. I create a token, but we saw that the formatted looks the same. So from application point of view, it looks the same. You know, they treat them in the same way, same transparency aspects. And the whole idea with tokenization is that most applications can use the token. That's the premise. That's why this is attractive. I still keep the data length. That's why most applications can handle it. I keep the data type, so it looks like it's still text data. It's not binary data. Now, if you are doing an encryption, strong encryption like normal TDS, or you do a hashing, SHA-1, you create binary output data, as we talked about before. So with encryption, sometimes you can keep the length. With hashing, you almost always go beyond. You go to 20, you go to more. So basically no applications will tolerate that. So from a transparency point of view, it's a disaster. So your increased intrusiveness will hit you when you move up this stack, the data format stack. So this is one way to measure the impact of tokenization, format controlling, encryption, hashing. And we already said this. Many applications are just moving data around. It's just taking the data, moving it. So if it looks like real data, I'm fine. Few applications need to read the holes. You need to do a decryption. Many applications are looking at partial. So we already said that. Let's dive into tokenization a little bit more in detail, because companies that are only selling this approach, they show you that it looks nice on the surface, right? But when you start to dig into it, it's pretty ugly approach. Why? Because it's currently a centralized approach, one server in the world, or you have a failover and so on. But it's one. It's like a reservation system, one in the enterprise, one in the world. And if an application will need to see actually the real value, it need to go to this country that is hosting that server and more. And it can hurt availability and performance. And imagine a data warehouse that need to, if your data warehouse need to actually see the real value, should your data warehouse go out to a server in another country to, no. So watch out for companies that are only selling this technique. This is a pretty common implementation pattern where you have a branch office that collects data. You maybe encrypt the data up at that point, and then the data goes to your headquarters, into your central system, and you decrypt the data, and you may turn it into a token. What's so beautiful with a token here? You're already in a central environment, and down here you don't need to do any key rotation. For encrypted data, you need the annual key rotation based on PCI or based on best practices. So this is a pretty common way of using the technologies. When I say common, if not many people have actually deployed tokenization yet, but there's a lot of interest. I think this is just for you to read if you want to go back and read. The main difference is that it's random. It must be random. And watch out, some vendors or some implementations are not random. They have an algorithm to generate a token, and they call it a token. And if you have an algorithm, a mathematical way to generate a token, it's not a token. It's not data tokenization. It's a cipher. It's an algorithm. And maybe the worst algorithm, because it's something that you figured out yourself, your homegrown algorithm. And that's the worst place to be in. Let's take this approach. Let's do a white screen and look at the scenario. So you have someone that is entering, let's say, a credit card number into an application. The application is inserting this in a database. And now you decide, okay, where do I want to create the token? Maybe you want to create the token here. So the application is using an API, socket connection with some messaging to talk to the token server. And you get the token back. The token is stored in the database. So now the database is doing an insert, but instead of the credit card number in the insert, it's a token value. So this happened at the application layer, right? So it's intrusive to the application, but it's transparent to the database. And with the token, the database thinks this is the credit card number, so it will be whatever index you have, and referential integrity and joining. Well, it will work on as a casino, right? You may replicate over another database, and the referential integrity is there, and within your casino, this will work well. But if you or someone that actually want to see your credit card number, you do a settlement, you do a chargeback, you do something, you need to provide the credit card number. And either, let's say this is your application that is doing the settlement, before sending this, it need to talk to the token server, right? To flip it back. Or you might have a UDF here. Or I would say you maybe use the JVM, or you use XProc in the Oracle environment. And this, you may kick it off with a view trigger approach, calling out to the XProc, and the XProc is getting the real value back. Why do you want to do that? Okay, if I don't want to modify my application, that's a way to increase the application transparency. So here, the credit card number will be returned in that view, and the application will push it to your bank or your external party. So this is one scenario where we are operating at the column level. So you need to be basically with this approach, you need to be at the view layer, or you need to be at the SQL layer if you modify your SQL query, or you need to be at the application layer. So you can set this up in a B2B fashion, where you maybe share your special tokens with the bank. You don't want them to have your internal tokens. You maybe retokenize, give them a new token if you don't want to. But then the bank need to install that concept also. So there are, in many cases, it's secure FTP or FTPS. So the application is putting the data into a file, and it's securely transmitted to the bank using OpenPGP or something. So that portion is usually that point to point is usually handled in a store and forward, or if let's say that this is my data warehouse. A very reasonable way to do this, you want to put your data warehouse out of scope. So this part of the system should not have a capability to turn it back to clear text. So PCI is saying you need to have token in, you need to have token out. Then this system can be out of scope. This is a moving target. In October, they will put out some clarifications. But right now, the standard practice is that if you have token in, token out, and no way to flip it back to real data, then that system can be out. And you need network segmentation to segment off that system, not use a flat network. So here you have an ETL process loading your data warehouse. The ETL process can talk to the token server to convert your credit card numbers into tokens before you load the data warehouse. So you do all the statistics, and so basket analysis and all that BI based on tokens, all the patterns, and so you can see all the patterns, but you cannot get the real value. Then you have someone that is doing fraud analysis or something. That person could use an application that is outside this boundary, and that application can talk to the token server over here. Let's do it more like this. To flip the data in the token to real credit card number. So that process down there need to be separated from your token, that isolation. So we are seeing this ETL conversion as an emerging trend to make the data warehouse more secure, and also avoid the table scans. You actually easily can index your protected data, can index the tokens, and you may have what's called the smart tokens, where you have partially clear text. For example, in a credit card number, you may want to have the first four or six, the BIN number, so you can see how many Visa transactions or cards do I have, and so. So you could do a lot of analysis without seeing the middle part of the credit card number. A lot of BI you can do without knowing that the data is locked down. And it's kind of totally secure. I remember when Larry Ellison said unbreakable, so I don't want to use that word. I would say it's highly secure, because in this environment here, there's no way to flip it back, and the token is random, so you cannot break a token. The only way to break a token is to go to the token server, break into the Fort Knox, and use the service that is flipping. So it's, from a security point of view, an operational point of view, it's a beautiful model. No indexing problem, no performance problem. The only problem you have here is that the transparency is, of course, non-existent, because the process down here, that application need to be changed, right? And you need to modify your ETL process to be able to flip the data before loading. But in many cases, you are doing aggregations and stuff in the ETL process anyway. So this would just be another aggregation or conversion. So I would suggest, if you have a couple of vendors here, ask them about what they have. Do they have a database integration so the database actually can flip? Or do I need to modify my applications? A couple of features, functions here that you can ask your tokenization project internally, or if you have an external vendor. So use case comparison for protection options. So up here we have the clear, the strong protection like triple DES, and here we have tokens. And tokens look good at the surface, but we talked about some weaknesses. And weaknesses are in the areas of certain use cases. If you have, here we are good, high-risk data, perfect, long-lived data, perfect. It's secure, you don't need to do key rotation out there. You just do the key rotation in your token server. You need to encrypt your token server, right? And you need to do that. But out in the application databases, you don't need to touch the data. It can live forever. No key rotation. So down here, if you frequently need to flip it back, then maybe tokenization is not good. Maybe you have a batch that is printing statements, and the batch will take 1 week to run instead of 4 hours. Then you have a problem. And it can be easily be that case if you need to call a remote token server in another country when you do your batch. So that could be a non-starter. If you do a, if you need key rollover, then this is good. This is better than the normal strong encryption, because your key rollover is easier. We have said that. It's isolated. If you have a distributed environment, then you're really into a problem. What about the availability, performance, and so on? If you want to support all data types and sizes, usually it's easier with strong encryption, because you can hide it down in your database schema and the application will not be affected. You just map it between data types, and that can easily be hidden from the application. So let's compare clear, strong encryption and tokenization from these aspects. So I have a couple of different ways to view these different approaches. So depending on what you want to, how you want to evaluate, these can be helpful. More tokenization. At the end here of the tokenization, or close to the end, I just want to show you that tokenization is provided by a handful of vendors. A couple of vendors are not providing it. And it's pretty much the same from most of the vendors out there. And then you have the hosted model, but that is completely different story. That is about outsourcing, and I'm not talking about outsourcing here, because it's mainly the same evaluation as any outsourcing, do I want the data, or do I trust someone else with the data? Can I still use my data if I outsource, or do I need to do a lot of downloads before I can actually process my data? That's the normal outsourcing case, so I don't want to talk about that here. But watch out, and some of them are trying to put your data in the cloud in a country where, yeah. Okay, tokenization and PCI. I mentioned that it will be clarified. Do we know the outcome? No, it's up in the air. What will the PCI Council say? They have not decided. What will the car brands say? They have not decided. Are people using it, PCI? Yeah, but it's a gray area. Just be aware. Of course, vendors argue that it should be out of scope. And some of the auditors, PCI auditors, the QSAs, they rule in various directions. Some are saying no, some are saying yes. So it's a moving target. I don't think we need to spend time here, but it's you want to lower the price, make it more cost effective. That's basically why you do tokenization, different models. Yeah, pricing, I don't want to spend time on that. It can be a huge market. Some people are saying that this could be a huge market because you can use it for all kind of data, all kind of identifiers, social security numbers, other PII data, test databases, and it's potentially a huge market. We can look at some of the use cases, and we can see when it's getting ugly. This first type of application can use the stored protected value. We have seen that already. Use in S4. Don't need to do any flipping decryption. And then down here you have the worst case. This type of application needs actually the full clear text. And here you have an application that's operating on this, is doing something with this. This first application is just pushing the data around. Most applications are just pushing data around. That's why it can be cost effective. So now it's getting a little bit more complicated, but we have our three application types, and here we have strong encryption in this database. Here we have four method encryption. Here we have tokenization. And you have different use cases. This application is now using this data, and we said it can use data. No, nothing is needed. This application down here need full text, clear text. So someone need to actually flip this by the token server back to something I can send to the bank. So this is a many combinations. So why do I care? Because for these different application types, application type 1, 2, and 3, it will hurt my transparency if I'm using these models, tokenization, formatted encryption. It will hurt my applications of type 3. Watch out. What about security? The formatted encryption is not approved by NIST and PCI Council. So watch out from a security perspective, liability perspective. What about the performance and scalability? The third type of application type, where the batch is running for a week instead of 4 hours, can be a non-starter. Watch out. Same with availability. I may not get to the token server in time for my customer in the call center, for example. So you can read these charts and kind of see the landscape where you have the landmines and what to watch out for. Considerations. I talked a lot about these aspects. So here it's put in words, and you can go back and you can refer to this. Tokenization, there are some good use cases. High-risk data, you need full compliance, long life cycle, kill and over. So you have a couple of different use cases where tokenization is perfect. Now let's do the same thing for formatted encryption. And they, as we said, they look very similar. When you look at the value, you cannot tell if it's a token or if it's formatted encryption. But they are very different when it comes to these different evaluation criteria that we looked at before. So the ratings are very different. We said that this maintains the type and length, and of course it's transparent to the schema. But there are the considerations we talked about. Sometimes you have limitations on the size because it's an algorithm. It's not a token, so you can generate whatever you want. It's an algorithm with limitations. We talked about this before, but here it's kind of spelled out in clear text, in text. So the considerations, we have talked about them all, but not this one. They look the same. A token you can send between ASCII and EBCDIC platforms. It takes data and it translates to the same clear text value when you go to token server. But if you have a formatted encryption that is formatted on an ASCII system and you try to decrypt that, the bit sequence is different from the EBCDIC system. So when you move the data from EBCDIC AS400 mainframe down to an ASCII Unix Windows system, you will get the wrong result. So it's not so beautiful for protecting the data flow, which you need to watch out. You need to know exactly from point A to point B how to convert it back, how to do key rotation, what key was used. And if it's all over my systems, how do I do key rotation? There's nothing in the formatted, I mean, it looks like a credit card number. Nothing is saying that I use the first key or the second key. So how do I do key rotation? I just take down all my systems and do it over Christmas? No. So what are the marketing people or the sales people that are selling these type of approaches saying? Saying nothing. They say, look, it's easy, transparent. They don't talk about the considerations. You need to live those and, you know, experience the pain. We, as a company, we started 10 years ago with this approach. RSA, when I talked to Bob Griffin and other people, John Lisboa, on the encryption side, they started to look at these approaches 7-8 years ago, and they said, well, there are few use cases, there are many considerations, and our company and RSA said, this is not a big hit. We know how to do it, some customers are using it, but watch out. It's quite a few considerations. Watch out for companies that are not providing a variety of different choices, that are trying to force you into the one-trick pony. But is it good? Yeah, sometimes. Low risk data, if you don't need to be standard compliant, distributed environment. I wouldn't say that this one. It's risky to protect the data flow. You need to be very specific point to point. The performance can be an issue because it basically takes 10 times more than normal triple DES. Because it's using, or AES, it's using 10 rounds of AES before it gets that numeric value. So if don't do that too often. And we talked about this, and we talked about limitations here. Some are not supporting character data, so it's only numeric data, digits. Column level encryption. So here we have Oracle 8.9. No, not 8 anymore. We started supporting 8.04. Here I put 9, 10, 11. And here you have typical, or let's say the best third-party tools out there for column-level encryption. I put IBM DB2 on the Unix Windows platform and Microsoft SQL 2005 and 8 just as comparisons. And here we have the capabilities. What do they offer? Database file encryption, column level encryption. How much space do you add? Oracle used to be pretty bad there, but in added attributes in 10.2 and better in 11.1 that allowed you to specify attributes in the DDL, so you are not getting that much overhead. But expect with the native that you will expand the data. If you have a data warehouse, you don't want to add 25 bytes on each column. So that could be something to watch out for. Very few companies have formatted encryption and data tokenization. You find it in third-party database activity monitoring, encryption across different platforms, data masking. Okay, so if you are interested in these use cases, features, this is kind of the landscape, roughly. Another set of features, this is another vendor landscape. You have a couple of different vendors here. I put Oracle there. Different features, and you can see what they support and not support. Kind of navigating the landscape. Here is specifically column level encryption for 10 and 11. And not much happened between 10 and 11 regarding the column level encryption. You have a couple of issues that you should watch out for. This one was improved in 11.1. If you encrypt, let's say you do a triple DES, normal triple DES, there are third-party solutions that can lower your response time, basically, from, this is 100%, down to less than, you can reduce it by 80% for certain queries. So here we have 14 queries, and some of the queries did well when you use the Oracle Domain Index, part of the Oracle Extensible Indexing. I think it came in 8.17. And these particular queries are typically putting an encryption column in a WHERE clause. Here you can see the query 1, query 2, 3, and so exactly what they actually did, the data for the 14 queries. Over here, I like to skip this section because this is what you can get from Oracle. I don't need to talk about that. And you can get the pricing from Oracle. And the key management, there are, watch out, there are a couple of no that Oracle is not providing. So just be aware of the limitations here, the different releases. Should I use table space or column encryption? There are a couple of considerations. A lot comes down to separation of duties, performance. You could use some evaluation criteria for key management, key rotation, if you like. I just put them here for your reference. So different ways to rate different protection options. I don't want to talk too much about the system layers. This is for your reference. We talked briefly about different system layers, and we covered this, that depending on what level you put your enforcement, we talked about mitigating certain attacks. This is a summary. If you do it at the app level, database level, file system level, it will impact your performance, security, and this is what we mentioned before. You want a local service in most situations for your encryption, unless performance is not an issue. You know, go into another box. Here you have the transparency impact. So if you have an API, if you have database column encryption, tablespace encryption, or OS database file encryption, it will impact your transparency at different levels. So you can see kind of a pattern here. Where is your transparency hurt? Depending on what technique you are using or what layer you are applying it. More of that you can read. Reporting. If you need reporting, you better do it at the database level. Different kind of reports, you can see what's happening. There are some use cases you can look at here for protecting the data flow. Some summaries that are showing, in this case, ease of deployment versus separation of duties or different layers. I think they were summing up that, okay, there's a risk cost and implementation cost, and you want to balance that by, for different risk level data, low risk, you may want to monitor, high risk, you may want to use replacement, tokenization, or strong encryption. In the middle, you can play with monitoring, masking, and so on. Thank you very much.